Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome back to Idle Red Hands.
Oh, that was smooth. That was smooth. Oh,
God. I'm Lyle.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Chris.
I'm Christos.
I'm going to use my normal voice from now
on. Oh, yeah!
Whereas I'm also going to use my regular voice.
Yeah, we've got complaints.
Welcome back, Christos.
Thank you. Just for anyone who's listening to me podcasting here for the first time, please stop and go back and listen to my first appearance, which is titled Do Not Pass Go.
It was a doozy.
You won't understand anything in this podcast without it. Previously on
Nun Rape.
Nun Rape for those of you who don't know. We talked about B movies.
Hey, you just got a jail, eh?
Your sister.
Fresh start.
And I guess you weren't playing Monopoly either, huh?
Bad B-movies and packs of B-movies, and Lyle said he bought a bunch of sci-fi
working the way through
movies, right? And then Chris mentioned that a friend of yours, right, also bought a similar pack and got a hideous nun-rapey, I think it was the term of the day, nun-rapey DVD in that pack, and turns out you got that DVD in your sci-fi pack, right, Lyle?
Yeah, it turns out it's about nurse rape. So
which is a step up, I guess.
Women
right?
in uniforms.
No?
No, it's just not about nuns.
Yeah. It's just not about nuns. Okay.
It's all just a matter of flavor. I mean, what do you like? You know?
The movie's called Naked Massacre.
And all you need to know right in the title, Naked Massacre. Wow.
Right. It's actually got a lot more to it than just rape. you got to watch like a good 40 minutes before you get into the rape.
And massacres.
It's based off of a true story. Well, it's inspired by a true story. Richard Speck, and he, this American guy who raped and killed a bunch of nurses.
Okay. This movie was set in Ireland. Is the real story from Ireland as well?
No, it's American. I think it was in Illinois that he committed his crimes. So Naked Massacre is set in Belfast, so it's got kind of a lot of the background is in the 70s, so it's about the fighting in Belfast in the 70s is part of the beginning. You got a Vietnam vet who's going crazy. There's some incest allusions in it.
It's got it all.
That's got it all.
What more could you want?
It's one of those movies that it's better than it had to be. We'll say. And I didn't find the scenes all that graphic, so.
Yeah, like, it was, I saw it years and years ago, I think.
I think you're supposed to, it's a slow build, and then when you do it, you're supposed to be disturbed, as opposed to some of the pornography that you can buy in this country, where it seems.
Cockroach porn,
I was just thinking of the rape porn, that's just out now.
Yeah, I suppose, like, my memory of it, I'm sure, is pretty unclear, because I watched it with the guy, my friend, who likes to fast-forward through the boring parts to get to the quote-unquote good parts. So, the take from that what you will, but...
Wow, I realize why that friend is now nameless. Protecting his identity.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that wasn't all we were going to talk about today, was it? We didn't invite
Christos
back for the nun rape, did we?
Oh, nurse rape. Oh, I'm going to go. But it's funny, it's like these kind of like exploitation films probably, at the time, you probably have to throw in all the nudity just to get people to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then when pornography, like when VCRs came out, became more accessible, just like the commenter on the guy on the forums, when he was talking about Japanese pink cinema.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going through, it definitely went through a period of decline in the 80s when you could get pornography on video, because a lot of people are watching pink cinema. Pink is kind of, you think red back in North America, but it's we're kind of like soft pornography. Yeah. And they would have Yakuza stories and maybe samurai stories as well, but kind of, it's a story surrounding just nudity.
Yeah.
And a lot of people got their start in that cinema. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the cases where the director wanted to tell a larger story than just rape, or he wanted to talk about why would somebody do that.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, it was, yeah, like I said, better than it had to be. which is in contrast to Robin Hood, well, the new Robin Hood, which is worse than it should have been.
But it's very interesting. It's almost like a different kind of exploitation where, you know, that's ones where it's a weak story wrapped around nudity, whereas Robin Hood is maybe a weak story wrapped around violence and explosions.
The production design is amazing in Robin Hood. It's really good.
Oh, so it is good then?
No, the production design. Oh, okay. The production design. Yeah, it looks good. Mm-hmm. If people have saw Kingdom of Heaven?
Yeah, I was thinking of that when you said that, Ridley Scott, yeah,
wants to go all out. So Kingdom of Heaven, the big flaw is Orlando Bloom, is they cast him as the main character. But a lot of the story is interesting.
Good action scenes.
Good action scenes, amazing action scenes, amazing production design, and all the supporting cast is really, really good. And in Robin Hood, it's got Russell Crowe, I think he's a good actor, and he's the star. Cate Blanchett's amazing actress, and she's Marion, and it's just got a really weak story. Even though it tries to not to be any spoilers, but it's taking the Legend of Robin Hood and trying to give it like a historical context and kind of trying to elevate the story by working it into actual King John's real story, you know, with the Magna Carta and stuff. But it just kind of fails. And it kind of also sets up a sequel. It's not really a story.
I heard it's sounds like a kind of a prequel to the regular Robin Hood story.
That's exactly what it is, actually.
Because honestly, what movie is made now that usually doesn't leave the door open for a sequel?
Of course. And the dialogue's pretty... you can't say it's bad or stilted because, you know, capable people are delivering it. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Just a boring story?
Yeah. But it's great for getting pictures for a fantasy game because the production design is incredible.
That's something I really need to work on.
some of the action scenes, it's kind of the opposite of like somebody like Michael Bay or Zack Snyder, where they kind of just go on and on and on, and you get tired of the action scenes. Where there, it's like Ridley Scott can film action scenes. Mm-hmm. It just they seem kind of short.
Yeah. I've noticed Ridley Scott. Is one of the many directors today who uses the swirly cam method of filming action scenes, where we just shake the camera left and right as fast as possible. Yeah.
If you saw Saving Private Ryan, which I'm sure a lot of people have, then one of the action scenes will definitely harken back to the opening scene on the beaches of Normandy.
That was like one of the first movies to use that shaky cam, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
But I think
maybe one of the first movies where the guy didn't need to use the shaky cam, and when you take off the lens that cuts down on the light glare, which has become in vogue recently with film directors like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. My mom, she gets really easily car sick, and she couldn't watch Saving Private Ryan without getting nauseous.
But I think in a World War II setting, it might even like work to the benefit of the story. Like it's chaos; you don't know what's going on. But a lot of like fighting action movies where the story is not really so serious, but stuff like, say, I noticed it in Batman Begins too. You want to see the guys fighting, you know? You want to see like the choreography of it. And I could hardly tell what was going on from one fight scene to the next.
Yeah, go on.
No, go on.
It definitely gives a sense of immersion because, you know, real vision does shake around and it lets you feel inside it. But yeah, when you're talking about a movie where the action is very stylized, it takes a little bit away from it.
Yeah.
Well, I would take it a step further. Just like if you watch, you know, when the speed up, slow down technique or the bullet time technique. Yeah. And it's good when it's used sparingly.
Yeah.
But then when everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon and then you got shaky cam. Big fan, Friday Night Lights, the TV series. People say it's kind of shaky cam, but basically they're using a different style where they don't necessarily block the actors like a normal TV series. Yeah. And the camera operators have a lot more freedom, as well as the actors, of where they want to go in the scene and in the setting. So I think it works there, but a lot of times you're throwing in the shaky cam, and you're like, oh, you don't need to have that. Yeah. And that might have added a sense of realism to that scene if I hadn't seen it like half a dozen times, you know, the last six movies I saw. And the same with the Star Trek, where you got the light glare, when you're like, well, why did Star Trek need that, for one thing? But the fact that other people, they strip off the... Is it actual lens? Sorry, Chris, I'm going to ask you, because you're more from... You study filmmaking. But are they stripping the coating off the lens?
They might... I don't know.
Or are they taking just like a a protective lens off.
It might just be like a filter off the lens.
Yeah, there's a couple different. There's like a polarizing filter, which cuts down on light glare, but there's also UV for outside, and it could be either of those.
Okay, but either way, they're taking something that cameras have had for decades, and there was a reason why people invented this, you know, these coatings and filters. And you're thinking, well, if there's a reason to take it off, great. Yeah. But instead, why was there a reason? Why
but I actually really like that. Like, I like, not to get too technical, but if you cut off the high end of the picture, like, things get really blown out and overexposed on the high end. And I actually like that a lot.
But would you like it all the time? It's like 3D. Like, when the 3D...
We're still in the middle of the 3D.
Is it still? Kind of. Are we still? I thought it kind of just
it's
died.
It's never going to end, guys.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's.
I think people got tired of paying that much. Sure. Like 3D's been around since what, the 50s.
Well, I'm not like the double, like the red and blue glasses thing, but the new stuff. I mean, movie theaters now they can charge $5 extra for each person to go in.
No, I know, and movie theaters like it, but do you think? I think people are going to stop paying the extra money.
But you know, now they're making 3D TVs too, right?
Yeah,
3D computers, and you know. The 3DS game system.
Yeah.
It's. I think it's just going to be part of our entertainment options from now on.
Right.
Whether we want it or not.
Yeah. Eventually, I think it'll just get standardized, and all movies will just cost $5 more.
Yeah, but you know, some form of entertainment that's always 3D and always has been.
Real life.
Board games are always 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well.
Not only that, you can actually interact with them. Wow, and we those went dice to, look real. Oh,
we went to a 3D convention, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
In that it was in the real world.
So last weekend we all went to kind of like a small game convention. It was part of the Kansai branch of the Japanese International Gamers Guild.
There's a Kanto branch.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That's what JIGG stands for, Japan International Gamers Guild.
Okay.
So I had actually signed up for the Yahoo group like a while ago, maybe even like two or three years ago, and then kind of completely forgot about it.
I think so did the owner back then.
Yes. And I can't remember exactly why, but I think there was like an update in the group, and it sent me an email or something, and I went on there with the website, and saw that they were having like a 5-day convention over Golden Week, and all of us.
For our listeners not in Japan, Golden Week is a week in May that a lot of national holidays come together, so they
just take the whole week off.
Yeah, people take the whole week off.
Some people,
hence Golden Week.
So,
there's no Silver Week.
No, Golden Week. That's not worth telling.
All right. Anyway, so so we. Lyle and I went to the convention on Saturday.
Sorry. What? You were going, you talked that long about nurse rape and you can't tell me about Golden Week? How long did I have to hear about 3D? I empathize with you. Listen.
So I'm sure we could put it somewhere on the website what exactly Golden Week is. But
so we went to a convention. It was great. We went home. After that, we did something else. And that's pretty much it.
Anyway, getting back to nun rape.
Jeez, all right. So Saturday, Lyle and I went down there. And then Sunday, the four of us went down there together. Yeah. And as soon as everybody stops laughing, we'll discuss it. So.
Well, it was really good. I Wayne told me about it. And, you know, convention that was quite close to where we live.
So
we had to take advantage of it. There was promise of role-playing games and board games, some of which I'd never played before.
Even heard of for me.
Yeah. It was the people there were great, really friendly. As soon as we walked in, we were able to join a game.
And the food, wow, it was great.
Yeah, for 1,500 yen, it was all you could drink.
$15.
Yeah, roughly equivalent.
Well, actually, I mean, with today's exchange rate about $500.
And we're gonna talk about that. We can't talk about Golden. you got all you can eat, all you can drink, and it truly was all you could.
I definitely got my 1,500 back in the food.
You know, I think I definitely ate too much, and I think it was just because I ate constantly, and my body was not used to always putting food in it. And it was very very healthy.
There was
fruits, vegetables, fajitas.
Tortilla wraps,
yeah, like olive salads, hummus. Man, it was great.
Yeah, a lot of salads.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Which is especially good for us because we don't get that kind of food in Japan.
Yeah, right. It's obviously all like Costco
as
stuff.
Often as we'd like.
Yeah, as often as we'd like. Yeah.
So no, it was fantastic. It was really, really well worth it.
Thanks a lot to our host Ryan and Linda.
Yes,
who organized that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to Ryan actually about the food. He said he spent Juman, about $1,000 on food and drinks for the whole 4 days of the convention. And his main goal now was just to try to recoup as much of that money as possible.
Yeah, I was thinking that they were just trying to, they would maybe break even.
Yeah, if they're lucky, yeah.
But they just seemed to do for the love of gaming and getting people together. So
yeah, it was really nice.
It was really good.
Yeah, I wish I could have gone the whole 4 days, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd have been great.
But yeah, I worked the first day and then we was able to go the
Saturday,
two.
Sunday,
yeah, but wow.
I was off work the whole time. But yeah, kids.
Yeah, you could
why
have brought them.
Kids?
Yeah, you could have brought them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of first-time gamers or people who didn't game a lot, so that was good to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Some Japanese people, too, came?
Yeah, yeah, they were basically the first-time gamers. It's all the foreigners that were the hardcore people with one guy, I guess, sounds like his apartment's just filled with games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Talking about getting storage space for it. All right, so we had an opportunity to play a lot of games that we've never played before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Wayne was good enough to run a Hollowed Earth Expedition role playing game.
Yeah, kind of a little one shot
on the Sunday. So I think that was the first time to role play for at least one person at the table.
Yeah.
The Japanese person again.
Yeah.
And wasn't it great seeing girls at a gaming
wasn't
day
it
too?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this is the lives that we could all be leading. Almost like regular social activities.
Almost. But it's all right, so people can go around and say what they played.
Oh, okay.
Oh, just maybe say what I liked and I'll cover
exactly
all the things. So.
Yeah. You don't have to say all of
them. Oh, okay. Space Alert. Awesome. Woo.
Yep.
I was hoping for a little bit more information.
Wow, this is going to be like a 20-minute
episode. Yeah, a little bit more than just the name.
You can just Google it, whatever. It's
maybe why you liked it, a little bit
Google
setup.
That. I believe Space Alert's on.
Yeah. No, Space Alert, it's... how to describe it? It's kind of a game where you have different kind of tasks and different kind of enemies and things. You have to set up and plan for these things, though. When you're setting up and planning, you're not entirely sure what order they're going to come in or how quickly. But the real catch to it is that it plays a CD while you're playing, so you have a very limited time to plan.
Make your decisions,
And it's just such a scramble, because you have to work together with the other players to get everything set up in time, and it's just running like, okay, I got this card, and does someone else have the other card? And it was a real race kind of game. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Wayne and I played that on Saturday, and I only noticed it because it was sitting on top of Shadows Over Camelot, which is one of the two games I really wanted to play because they had been listed on Board Game Geek. And then I turned it over and I said, play the CD in real time or something. Like it's like a cooperative survival game.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, I want to try that. Mm-hmm. And it was only like 30 minutes, it said.
Yeah.
Chris learning the rules, it tacks on the time, but it played quite quickly. And yeah, we were sold. Yeah, you listen to the CD and there's a mad rush and communicating, and then you got to lay, each card represents an action that you're taking, and you have to coordinate your actions with everybody on this spaceship that's in distress. And that's then you have to find out if what you were saying and what you were planning actually works out, because then after the CD finishes, then you basically flip over the cards and follow the sequence and see if you actually did stuff. So sometimes you would be firing into nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
or
you already killed.
Your gun has no energy.
Some actions are getting energy to guns, some actions are firing guns, some actions are recharging the energy, pressing a button on a computer. It's really, really, really fun.
Do you guys remember who made that?
Vadim?
Chuck, I think he's a Czech.
Okay.
Yeah.
Czech guy.
I think it's published. I think the game publisher is Rio Grande Games.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Chuck something.
But you said it was the same guy that did Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah. And also, I was surprised that you liked the game so much.
I think Lala was too.
Yeah.
Oh, is it
the same guy that did Galaxy Trucker? Holy crap!
But when I was playing it, I was thinking this is the game that Galaxy Trucker was trying to be. And then I was like, oh, obviously he made Space Alert after Galaxy Trucker. He learned that what a rubbish game Galaxy Trucker was.
it was
really, really, really fun. And it was the game that we most raved about after Saturday.
Yeah, I think
Chris and Christos came to Sunday and were saying, you have to play this. Yeah. And we also said, you have to play Thunderstone.
Which I wasn't as impressed with. It was fun, don't get me wrong, but like it wasn't something that I thought, oh, I really want to buy this.
It's one of those deck resource card, deck management card games.
Yeah. I think you can compare Dominion, which you have.
Yeah.
I think it's a better game. But again, I don't want to give Thunderstone a negative review. It was a good game, but...
Yeah, basically, it's you assemble a party of adventurers who go into a dungeon killing monsters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I don't want to compare it necessarily to Dominion and say because it's not as good as Dominion, therefore it's a bad game. But even on its own right, I don't think it's a game I'd really want to have either. As a dungeon crawl, it's not that fun, really.
Mm-hmm.
Thematically, I think it's not quite enough theme to really be interesting as a game, but too much theme to get in the way of the gameplay. For example, if you thought about the way you play the game as a real game, or as a real life experience, you randomly get a bunch of people and items that you've acquired, you randomly draw them out of your pool, you take a peek in the dungeon, oh, those monsters look a bit too strong for me today, I'm just going to go back to the village and buy something. That's how the mechanics of the game play out, right?
Mm.
But if you think about it just as the gameplay, how fun the gameplay is, then you're wasting so much time getting your items and managing your deck, and I felt that made the game a bit too slow, a bit too long. And comparing it to Dominion, that whole dungeon crawling aspect of it is cut out, which makes the gameplay itself a lot quicker and a lot more streamlined. Not as thematic, but ultimately better, I felt. So, yeah, I definitely wouldn't buy it. And
That's hard, because I would put that, although I probably like Space Alert more as a game, I would say I'd be more likely to buy Thunderstone.
Yeah.
And the reason is that it kind of fits in a niche that I'm missing in my games, or just something that's kind of reasonably compact. You could set it up pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
Very easy to explain.
Mm-hmm.
As one of those games that you truly could just give a few rules.
Especially if you can read the cards.
Yeah,
and then just get started and using the first couple turns for players to to help the player, help the new players out and what are good actions and not good actions, which a lot of board games it's kind of difficult because if you help them too much, then you kind of might
screw yourself.
Over, or if you don't help them at all, then after a couple turns, they feel like they've lost the game already, and they're just kind of going through the motions for the rest of the game.
I think what bumps Thunderstone up a little bit for me is the fact that we only played with a small subset of the cards that came in the box.
That's true.
It seems like there were a lot more different kinds of monsters and items, and when Lyle and I set it up, we only set up the version
that we had played
the previous day, because that's the cards we knew to pull out. But it looked like there were a bunch more things you could do, even with the...
Yeah, there was three. We pulled out three sets of monsters to make up the dungeon.
Yep.
But there were other monsters in there. We pulled out the same four adventurers as we played on Saturday, but there was a lot more. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot more adventurers you could do. So basically, you could have a different game experience. Even the items in the village are different.
Yeah.
Like the magic items, so...
One small negative was... To me, the cards, I don't know how you would lay them out better, but at sometimes, this might just come from playing more often. I always got confused what kind of icons what meant. I wish that there had been a little bit, the icons were all very similar. If they had been a little bit more clearly defined, and again, maybe that's just kind of like my design thing coming through, but you kind of looked at the card, and even after playing a couple times, you're like, okay, where was that?
Was that strength, this number,
carrying, or attacking? Or...
Yeah, there wasn't any icon. You just had to remember where the number was on the card. But that's a really nitpicky thing anyway.
Exactly. I like picking nits, but anyway.
Me too. Okay.
But I'm sure, just one more thing about Thunderstone, I'm sure once you play it a bit more, you can become more familiar with the strategies and the tactics, and it is probably a lot more you can think about in the game, like you were saying, Lyle, you're strategically burning cards to manage your deck better, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But at least at first for me, it just seemed like there were two options. Do I have enough weapons and light to kill a monster? If yes, do it. If no, buy something.
Mm-hmm.
Just repeat, repeat, repeat.
I could see that,
So that was a little bit boring for me too.
Hmm. Which said, though, you won, didn't you?
Oh, I came second.
Oh, okay.
But far ahead of you.
And yeah.
Me. Yeah, I just
thought. I thought I was doing great,
but behind...
Behind someone else who was playing.
Someone again.
What I was going to say, one of the games I was surprised by was Formula Day?
Formula Day. I guess it's called Formula D now, but we were playing the Formula Day version.
That was really fun, yeah.
Yeah, that was surprisingly fun.
Yeah, surprisingly fun, because you look at the box, and you look at the back of the box.
It was only because I think Ryan wanted to play, and he was the organizer, so you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he kind of brought over, and he's like, oh, you want to play this? And you feel like a tool saying no and getting up and leaving.
Race cars,
But that was my initial reaction. I was like, race cars?
Oh, I got some hand staring to do.
I don't know. Because to me, it just seemed like you roll a die and move your car.
Yeah, there was different... Well, people who play role-playing games would be familiar with, you know, different side of die.
All the novelty dice, yeah.
Yeah, so it starts at a D4 and goes up. Goes all the way up to D30.
Yeah.
And each die, or pretty much every die represents a different gear.
Yeah. So like first through six. But
yeah.
Looking at it, I didn't think it would be very fun. It just kind of like roll and move and roll and move.
But there's a lot of strategy once you hit the turns.
Yeah. I was surprised.
Yeah.
Like what gear you're going to be on and whether in a couple, you have to think a couple spaces ahead, you know, or a couple moves ahead because you're like, well, if I'm in this gear, I've got to be in this. Now, but if I got to be in this gear later.
Yeah, and there's resource management to it with your tires and gas and things.
And again, it was one of those games where you could just pretty much kind of give a brief overview of the game, get started, and then people can learn as you go.
Mm. Like we had the two Japanese people there, and one of them didn't even speak English very well.
Yeah.
And got it like that.
And it's just such a great implementation of the theme too, right?
Yeah.
Without being like overly complicated and boring.
Yeah, really well designed.
Yeah.
Speaking of Thunderstone and Formula Day, how about Wayne and talking over me whenever I explain instructions?
Aww. Yeah, right. That was
Am I right? Am I right?
I'm sure podcast listeners are familiar with this phenomenon. But
Well,
I'm sure anybody could sympathize if they just imagine every time you went to explain rules, if somebody finished all your sentences for you and then talked over you every time. To the point where at Formula Day, I said one sentence and then I said, do you want to explain the rules? Yeah, I do. All right.
See, then my plan worked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I got to explain it.
You won.
Yes, no. I won, exactly.
There's actually two games going on here.
Yes. It's all the meta game. Yeah, I only got to play Formula Day briefly, like, thanks to your
All right, well, back up. So Space Alert, we got a lot of thumbs up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Buy it, yes or no? You're spending about, it's about...
Probably 60 or 70 bucks.
It's about, 60 bucks.
Like I'm very, very cheap when it comes to game. I only buy.
So the answer is no.
You don't have to put a big preamble.
Actually, but that's the thing. Like I don't really buy games, but that's one that I would consider buying.
Okay.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's very high praise.
Well, I've already got Galaxy Trucker. So what do I need to buy that for? Galaxy Trucker is like a competitive version of Space Alert, and instead of arranging people,
but it's not really.
Instead of arranging
over people.
Thank you. Instead of arranging what jobs people are going to do, you're building a spaceship instead. I think those are the...
See, now I really want to try Galaxy. Well,
those are the two main differences between the games. And but having said that, I would definitely want to buy at least one of them for my collection. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm honestly not sure. I would want to know how... Like, I really liked Space Alert, but I would want to know how much replay value it had.
I wonder with the
I don't know how many missions... It has. Like, if things are random... Because we only played, like, the first two training missions, right?
No, we played a simulation.
Yeah, we played a simulation. We're still training. And part of the fun in that was sort of the mad scramble, because nobody really knew exactly what was going to turn out.
I imagine, though, they'd have plenty, because they got two CDs. CDs are, what, like, 70 minutes? And there's only a minute or two of explanation.
But I don't know. But if there's
a lot of different scenarios, and I think the actual scenarios are more random.
Yeah, and I can see
the scenarios are random. You get different threats attacking your spaceship.
Yeah.
And when you play, there's a lot of tutorials. And it's actually one of the few games where the tutorials are actually fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the threats that your spaceship faces are very controlled.
Yeah, so you actually stack them.
The replay value of those would not be very high. In the scenarios, I believe it's much more random what threats you're going to flip over.
If the threat scenarios are random, then it could have great replay value, and I would consider buying it. If it's kind of like, you know, you always have these things, and once you've played each scenario a couple of times, you pretty much know exactly how to beat it, then that would take it down a peg.
I don't think it's like that at all. Like, I was reading a review for it on Board Game Geek the other day, and like some guy was saying he'd played it with his game group 100 times.
Yeah.
And it's like one of their favorite games, and they love it, and like that gives names to their spaceships, and the ones that survive goes out and the same name will play the next game they play, the ones that die, they sing a little, you know, memorial song for it or whatever.
Wow.
But, you know, the main point being 100 games,
yeah.
That's a lot of replay value, I think.
Yeah. I wonder if it's on separate tracks where you could like hit shuffle and actually randomize it. Or, I don't know. Okay.
I don't know, because yeah. it might affect the setup of the board.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
I would say it would be in a second tier of games to buy. And it's not so much the replay, it's just how often would I play that game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said, and to go around about Thunderstone, I would actually buy Thunderstone because it's different enough from the games I play
mm-hmm.
that, like Space Alert, it requires a little bit of space to set up.
Mm-hmm.
You need your CD player or your MP3 player
mm-hmm.
Available. So I already have enough games that require a lot of space.
Yeah.
I love the gameplay. I love cooperative games. But Thunderstone is just different enough from the games I already have that I would definitely buy Thunderstone.
Yeah. See,
and I'm going to guess no from Chris and Christos. Yeah,
right. Well, I'd suggest try Dominion too before you buy Thunderstone. Similar kind of game.
Okay. Like, well, you should bring it over sometime.
Like that kind of card game, it really does fit a niche, but I wonder if Thunderstone's the best one. And I haven't tried enough to say one way or the other.
Right. Wayne, would you buy Thunderstone?
Probably just because I like card games.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, why don't you have Dungeoneer?
It's also...
Well,
I think it's about $30 as well. So it's also half the price of Space Alert.
Yeah, I think that's what would attract it to me, too. It's kind of... Again, I don't know how many options were in the box for Thunderstone. Everything is random, so it would have a slightly higher replay value. They even had cards so that you could randomize what was in the village and what monsters' decks were in the thing, which we didn't use. Mm-hmm. But... I don't know.
The cards look great. Great artwork.
Hmm.
What about Formula D? Or I guess you would buy it now as Formula D, because a new company is releasing it.
I really enjoyed it, but I don't think it's one that I would buy. I don't...
It's one of those... For me, it's one of those games you wish somebody else would buy
in your gaming
group, and you're like, all right, yeah, buy that. Sorry. No, Chris, you should buy that.
That said, though, actually, it's a game that I could see going over really well with girlfriends and wives and such.
Or like a party game.
Or a
drinking game.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Well, for those of us who don't like beer spit on our boards, I would say no, but...
one of the few sacrifices you have to make for having fun.
Exactly.
I think I agree with you, Lyle.
I wouldn't make it the centerpiece of a gaming session. Right,
it's weird. Maybe it's not the best game for gamers, quote unquote. But
you know, we were talking about the fact that there was women at this convention, but you notice the games that they were playing. They were playing games like Formula D
mm-hmm.
or
Mafia Wars was the
No. Wait a minute. Was it Mafia Wars?
I think they were actually playing Mafia Wars.
That's the one because Gabby, she had a really cute voice, but she kept saying, "And this is how you kill people."
I thought it was called something else. It was about the mafia, but
wait, Werewolf?
No, it was Mafia Wars.
I didn't even
see that. Oh, okay. No, it actually was the mafia team. Ah, just drawn a blank, sorry.
Anyway, they're also playing Colorado. I don't know if you've ever played that before. That's also a very light, fun color.
Oh, they were playing collecting game. Forbidden Island?
Yep, Forbidden
Island. And we played that, so that was one of the board games where there was a woman playing with us. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call Forbidden Island a board game. It's more like a tile game.
Okay.
Hair split?
Yeah.
All right, whatever.
So, Forbidden Island, you guys didn't play that, but basically it's by the same guy who made Pandemic.
Oh, sorry, Wayne, would you buy Formula D?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay, thank you. Anyway, moving on. Cool.
I was kind of getting that long waffling was going to leave me out.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Forbidden Island.
So, we Wayne and I played Forbidden Island on Saturday, and it's by the same guy who made Pandemic, and it is, it's like Pandemic. It's just... Actually, the guy's probably smart, because he's like, okay, I made Pandemic, but a lot of people get turned off by the disease theme. Uh-huh. So here's the, the spouse-friendly version, or the party game version. Yeah. And that's basically what it was. And instead of a board, it was tiles.
Okay.
So
was it as good as Pandemic? Because you gave that rave reviews.
It probably would have been if I played that first.
Okay.
But it was like, I'm playing Pandemic, except I have tiles that flip over because of flooding.
So that would be a recommended game then, yeah?
Yeah, I would recommend, but just don't get both. You could buy either or. Probably, I personally like the disease theme,
mm-hmm. yeah.
The outbreak theme of Pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I really bought into that.
Hmm.
I didn't really care for the theme so much in Forbidden Island, which basically is you're getting these treasures off this island before it floods.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for a game that you could break, that you could play with non-gamers,
yeah, I think that's what it is.
So mixed company, then definitely you should spend your money on Forbidden Island.
Yeah,
instead.
Forbidden Island would definitely be a non-gamer.
And it's more compact.
Yeah.
game. Because it's a tile, so the box is quite small.
It was a nice tin I came
with. It comes in a nice tin.
Some guys are playing that Crokino game.
Oh, yeah.
I want to play it so badly.
That takes up a lot of space.
Yeah, it does. It looks like so much fun that I've considered just buying it, but the board's like $300.
Yeah, make one of your own, huh?
I thought about it, but I'm not that good.
I could see that. Yeah, you try and like flick the little thing across the board and it doesn't go anywhere because the surface is just so rough. Like,
right.
I played that one as a kid. I don't really remember the rules.
I think it's actually a Canadian game, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if it's a Canadian game. It's popular, more popular in Canada.
Do you guys know Lawn Bowls? The basic rules of Lawn Bowls?
I don't.
Like on... Like outside, played outside?
For American people.
Like lawn bowling.
Yeah.
You mean
lawn bowling.
Long, yeah.
Grass. Bowling, yeah.
Grass? That's
It's a similar concept for Crokinole. You've got to get your ball to the center and try to also hit your opponent's ball, in this case.
Kind of sound like curling.
Away. Yeah, a little like curling as well.
Yeah, curling is really popular in Canada.
Ice instead of grass, yeah.
Ice? What? That's ice. What are you talking about?
Ice.
We didn't play that.
That's a regret not playing, but maybe look forward to next time.
Yeah, so that's your big regret, Crokinole. Mine was I didn't get to play a Game of Thrones. No. It looked a lot like, I've heard that it's very similar. It's like basically diplomacy plus alpha, like with a little bit extra.
Yeah, maybe a bit more fighting.
There's cards and that. Like people have different abilities and resources.
Yeah. That said, though, it didn't get very good reviews.
Yeah.
From the guys that played it there,
Yeah. So, I'm the same. I regretted not being able to play it at first. But, yeah, as it turns out, probably wasn't a big loss.
Well, I wonder, like, everybody, the two guys that I talked to about it, they said that the gameplay itself is really good, but the setup is really unbalanced at the beginning because it tries to mirror the way that the book is.
Yeah.
That's difficult for, like, any board game. It's like when they try to... Like, even, like, Axis and Allies, which a lot of people have played, and they're trying to... Of course, you're playing Germany, Russia, and that, so they're trying to simulate a little bit. This is how it starts. So...
Yeah, I was talking to Lyle about that later, after he said the guy who played Lannister was in a pretty just crappy position at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And, I kind of likened it... Not having played it, but I kind of likened it to... Maybe it's like Axis and Allies, where I said... Maybe there's a very small selection of moves that the player has to do to kind of get in a good enough position, you know, where you kind of have to mirror what happens in the story or mirror what actually happened in the war. And, yeah, you have options of doing other things, but if you don't kind of do those things, then you're just in a terrible position. So
I think what happened is the guy that played Greyjoy just came after him. And... For those who are familiar with the books, Greyjoy doesn't go after Lannister.
Okay.
So there may have been a bit of everybody knows that Lannister starts off with a lot of resources or something like that. I haven't played it. So they kind of realized, well, we got to knock out Lannister early because then once we, if we knock him out early, then they're just in a vulnerable position because they're in the center. So we can all gang up on them.
Yeah.
Because if we don't gang up on them, then basically they'll become powerful. So... You're kind of like everybody's metagaming it, essentially.
Absolutely.
But like,
especially in the...
Because we know what this guy's like.
Yeah, in the game, the real world, you know, everyone's... The real world. In the books, everyone's reluctant to go to war with each other. But in the game, you know, swords...
That's out. The point of the game, yeah.
So
they didn't attack the North. So the North, actually... If you look at the map in a Song of Ice and Fire, the North's in a really sweet strategic position in that.
Huge they've got a back.
Like, and then they got, like, a little narrow place to attack by land, and then, like, one harbor to
across
attack.
Across Moat Caelan.
Yeah.
So, minor spoiler alert for the books, I guess, but the scenario of the North being really powerful in that game they played and the Lannisters getting wiped out, pretty much opposite of what happens in the books, right? The North pretty much just gets weaker and weaker as the story goes along, whereas the Lannisters, they're just kind of, they're not even in any real positions of power at the start of the story, right?
They're in a huge position of power, and they're also really wealthy.
Yeah, they're wealthy, that's true, but just,
I think they're referred to, like, even in the first book as the most powerful house.
But you know, they don't have any, like, kingdom, or they don't have any, like, political power. But
they do,
because, like, they're the queen.
The queen, yeah, but like just the queen, right?
But he's also a powerful lord. Kind of getting sidetracked.
Yeah.
We'll just agree that you're wrong. And sorry.
Agree to disagree.
No, but no, it does. The initial point is like, yeah, it does play out kind of the opposite, or at least the game that was, and they actually played twice because they have to start over after the first two turns. Yeah. And this is again why one of the reasons why I like Thunderstone so much is that in a game like Twilight Imperium 3, or it sounds like a Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. if the players aren't, you know, 100%
sure
the rules or what to do, or like even like what Wayne was saying is like, yeah, here's kind of the strategy that you need to do in the first two turns, then they've pretty much gone in the first two turns, and that's pretty much what happened. So after two turns, they basically agreed to restart, and even after restarting, they kind of just did the beat up the leader at the beginning.
I don't know, it looked good enough, and
I still want to try it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. I still want to give it a run, but. And I think one of the guys mentioned that there is some alternate setups on BoardGameGeek that
might
get more balanced.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. So
that was a regret, and Barbarossa, but we'll have a chance to rectify that soon. Barbarossa is another, I guess, it was compared to Dominion. So I guess maybe like Thunderstone as well, but basically a card management or deck management game, but based on the...
World War II?
Not
exactly.
The Eastern Front.
It's
called Barbarossa.
Yeah, I know. But
it's got pictures of the Nazis attacking.
So it's obviously about islands and resources.
Yeah, about islands and resources. But I only said not really because nobody plays the Russians.
Okay. All right.
I'll play the Russians?
No, nobody gets to play
them.
Everybody is
the Germans.
German side.
And they're basically attacking cities and towns.
Also, it's a cooperative game.
No, it's not. You're all on the.
I guess the Russians are the monsters in the dungeon.
Yeah, essentially.
Kill those Russians. Okay.
Essentially, that's what it is. From what I've heard.
Interesting theme.
But it's still Barbarossa.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't disagree with the name or the thing. Anyway. Okay. All
right. Oh, I also played Ad Astra, by the way.
Yeah, we played that before. I really liked that game.
Yeah, me too. I had a kind of a weird moment while I was playing that, and you guys maybe finished playing Formula Day. I think
we Space Alert. No, Space Alert. Yeah, not important.
While I was playing, you guys just finished, and Lyle came over to just say hello and have a look at the game, how I was going, and I felt it was a weird kind of. Seeing someone from your old, like your an old ex or something, I was playing the game. Lyle comes up and goes, "Hey, how's it going?" And I was
like, "You look well."
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly. Yeah,
nice to see you. All right.
You look well. Okay. Well, yeah. See you later then. Yeah. Went back to my game.
What did you think about Astra?
It was great. Yeah, I felt like it was maybe a better version of Settlers of Catan.
Hmm. Yeah, I think Lyle, you said the same thing.
Yeah, I remember you making that comparison.
Yeah.
You got bidding. You got negotiation, dealing, bluffing. Which cards you're going to play? You know. If I don't play this card, can I piggyback on someone else's order that I need to do, or should I play it myself? Yeah, a lot of great stuff going on.
I really enjoyed that game. Yeah,
that's one of the things I like about Ad Astra, because like even though it's a sort of like a hidden setup, you sort of program what you're going to do by laying face down cards.
Yep. Yeah.
But everybody else has an option of doing something on everyone else's card.
Similar to Twilight Imperium.
I guess in a kind of similar way. I think it's a much more interactive version of Settlers of Catan, where Settlers of Catan, you just kind of do whatever's on your card. Okay, my turn's done.
Yeah,
you go
yeah.
next. And
Settlers of Catan, maybe too much luck with the dice rolling.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that kind of can kill the game, like your enjoyment, because you're just, I'm just not getting anything because the dice not rolling my way.
You know, Astra, maybe the only luck is which resources happen to be on the planets you land on or the systems you land
in. Yeah.
And kind of luck, I guess, is what orders the other people decide to play. Mm. I think that's just enough luck that you need in a game.
Mm.
Yeah, it was really good.
No, I really enjoy that game. So fortunately, Wayne has it, so you don't have to buy it.
Yeah, it's been a while for that one.
Has been a long time, actually.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
What else was there?
We played, what?
Flux?
Okay. Yes, we did play Flux. Mm. It's a card game. This one happened to have a Monty Python theme.
Mm-hmm.
Was it actually Monty Python and the Holy Grail or just Monty Python?
A lot of the cards were Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, but it did have the dead parrot, so I guess it's just Monty Python in general.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, like, I kind of like the premise to it, and by premise I mean gameplay, not the Monty Python spin.
Really?
It was a really simple, just these two rules, but the rules were constantly changing.
And yet we kept on forgetting even those two rules. We just start playing a card, and like Mark would be like, oh, you forgot one of the two rules.
I was like couldn't decide if that was supposed to be funny. To keep saying, oh, there's only two rules. You forgot one of the rules. And I was like, oh.
It was a lot of considering if this rule... Like, I had four cards in my hand, and it says you can draw one card and then play one card. Those are the only two rules. But then all of the cards in my hand had a different... It changed the way the rules were. Maybe it's just the first time playing, so it was hard to get used to.
To me, it was like... you ever play Babanuki? It's a Japanese game.
Old Maid.
Yeah, I knew. I was trying to think of what
the English one was.
But I was like, I played that with my in-laws, and like, do you think this is fun? I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I didn't physically care for it. I think the game lived and died on how funny you find the cards.
Well, I was going to say, at the local game store, I actually found a Flux deck.
Yeah.
That was not Monty Python. It was, there was no theme on the card, nothing. It was just
vanilla kind of, Flux.
It was a vanilla, yeah, essentially vanilla Flux.
Huh.
So
I might have actually enjoyed that more. just because, like, learning the game, there's also the Monty Python spin. Like, this card, you can do this action if you talk in an English accent for the next 10 minutes.
Also, maybe, I wonder if that tries to give you the expectation, or that gives you the expectation that then this game should be funnier than it actually is.
Which is
not. Because you got Monty Python, you're like, yeah, I'm not finding any of these cards funny, but...
It's definitely not funny enough to work.
Yeah. It's like Kill Dr. Lucky. It's like, Dr. Lucky's not a horrible game.
I don't know about that. It's the only game where one of the players said, yeah, can we stop playing this now?
Oh, yeah, but it just... The cards try to be funny, and if you don't find them funny, and they're not.
So I think we all know who said, can we stop playing this?
No, it wasn't me, actually.
It was Yuji.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I played it once or twice and played it all the way through. But it was like Trailer Park Gods is another game. If you find... The card's funny, and it's a pretty simple game, getting your gods in a trailer park, and you got to get followers.
Yeah,
but
that's also kind of hard though with a game, because replay. I mean, once you've seen all the cards, they're not funny anymore.
Yeah,
I guess it's still good to have the solid gameplay, right?
Yeah.
But one thing I was disappointed in myself about with Monty Python Flux was. One of the cards was you have to say three consecutive lines.
Oh, from Holy Grail?
I think it was just
any. Oh, any Monty Python? Oh,
and I thought about it later, and I just couldn't do it. Like every Monty Python line I know is one, maybe two lines at most.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that I actually enjoy the movies, but unusual for a role player, as I can't quote it. And if people would quote Monty Python at the gaming game, I'm like, oh well done, yeah. I don't find it, like, laugh-out-loud hilarious. Like, the movies are laugh-out-loud hilarious, just... People quoting him afterwards, you're like, yeah.
Get the number of times
we
quote.
We are the Knights that go. See, I can't even get to that quote.
The number of times we quote the in-betweeners, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I realize I'm annoying, but.
Princess Bride is also an extremely quoted movie, right?
In
like geek circles.
Yeah, it's just like, should it be as quoted as it is? Yeah, it's just. Like, the in-betweener is kind of fresh, because. For me, at least.
Yeah, and that makes it okay.
Yeah, it makes it
okay. So long as it's okay for long. We also played, Betrayal on House on Hill?
Yeah, for those that listened to the last episode, the last board game episode, Do Not Pass Go, just listen for the golden tones of Christos, and you can find that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah!
So we did a little review of Betrayal on House on Hill, and one of the comments was, oh, that seems like it could have been better, but this particular game wasn't that crash hot. And it's kind of the same review. It was like, it seemed, and because we had that guy Mike, and you couldn't have asked for a more enthusiastic fan of that game. And he got into it, and maybe it was just because we're in a
well-lit convention
room, and you know, a bunch of other games are going on, and I don't know, just, and then I got to be the traitor this time, and it wasn't very much fun. So
yeah, because I remember
kind of felt like the odds were stacked against me to lose, because it seemed like it was quite difficult, my task, to kill off all the other players, and there was like five other players.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Same way for me last time. But
you won, right?
No, I lost. No. I killed one person, and two people were on the ropes, but I didn't.
Yeah, I remember on that day, because I said the same, that I wanted to play it again, so I was kind of sitting there, I was like, oh, hey, you wanted that one? You're just like, no, no.
Yeah, I don't know. I would play the game again, I bought it, so I have it, so...
I hope you play it again.
Yeah.
It'll go
but,
on
but probably
soon.
If I didn't have it, and I based it off those two times, I probably wouldn't buy it. So...
Yeah. Okay.
Also, like, probably our biggest gaming session of the convention, at least on Sunday, was the RPG, right?
Oh, what about Treehouse? Wasn't that... you didn't play that one.
Yeah, I was involved in that.
Sorry, before we get into the biggest gaming session, let's get to the littlest gaming session. We played a game called Treehouse, which is basically a stacking game.
Mm. Yeah, I would say, yeah.
Like, you've got three triangles? Three pyramids?
Three little pyramids.
Yeah, three little pyramids that stack on top of each other, and the goal is to match the layout of...
One set of them. Like a kind of a communal master set.
Yeah, master it's kind set. Like pyramids can be tipped over and point other directions, and each move is either pointing a direction or tipping it or stacking it or something like that.
Yeah,
and you roll a die and you follow the directions, whether it says, like, you know, tip, stack... Hop, whatever.
Yeah, that one gets a thorough from me.
I would say that was my least favorite game.
Sounded like it took a long time to explain as well. Like, while I was playing Ad Astra, like Linda was describing
it. It wasn't that it took a long time. It took a long time for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I think that can elevate or
detract from
a game. Like, Space Alert, like, when you're explaining the game, it's kind of a... Because when I was on the receiving end of having the game explained to me, you're like... I don't understand this game. Like, yeah. I don't understand any of this.
Let's just play and try it out, and let's just
go. Right, but you realize you need some of the rules. Yeah. But then when you play it, the game is so good that explanation, you just kind of forget about it. Mm-hmm. And Thunderstone, I think that the lack of explanation you needed kind of elevated that game. And this one, it was just kind of like this... But the explanation was much longer... Or it's much longer than the gameplay itself. Mm-hmm. And the gameplay was pretty meh.
But that said, like, four people brought a copy of it, and there was one table who played it there for a few hours, and the game didn't more than a few minutes, so they must have played it a few times.
One of the guys who owned one of the copies said that it's actually, even making games for those pieces is actually a little hobby in itself.
Huh.
There's like over 100 games listed on the internet you can play with those pieces.
Okay.
So it sounds like it just becomes a kind of a little... interest or a hobby for people who own it.
Well, so did those stacking those cups for a while.
Yeah,
those little kids stacking the cups and you're like,
Eventually
you're regretting those purchases.
Like, I could see playing Treehouse again with non-gamers.
I guess so. Like Jenga.
Yeah, it seems like a game to me where, like, kind of like you go to your grandmother's house, you know, it's in the drawer. There it is. You bust it out.
It's
with kind of
like
in-laws
on a bar
families.
For people to play while they're drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I was thinking it's not something really you would display proudly on your
drinking
shelf.
Jenga
like.
Is awesome.
I can see the bar.
If you play drinking Jenga, why don't you just play beer pong?
Why don't you just drink?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything's enjoyable if you're just drinking.
Especially drinking.
Hey, who's gonna get the next round? Okay, sorry to cut you off, Christos, but you were saying the biggest thing is
Yeah, right. That was probably the centerpiece of the day, right? It was Wayne's RPG.
It was cool. We had a really good show of it, too, because everyone was screaming and yelling.
Seven players in the end to play Hollowed Earth Expeditions.
I was worried it was just going to be us sitting by ourselves. And
there was that awkward
little
moment.
Yeah, I had brought you guys as ringers for that game, you know.
Well, what's this game? Oh, who are you? Oh,
yeah,
nice to meet you.
But that being said, like, if nobody else had signed up for it, like I told Lila, I just wouldn't have done it and just... scrapped it because I can play with you guys anytime I want, pretty much. But
so good that it worked out.
Yeah, kudos to you, man. Like when it was that, everybody stood up and like thanks. It was really well done.
Yeah. Nice job.
It was a fun game.
Yeah.
everyone at the table put on an accent too.
I was surprised about that. Everybody, I was because. You know, I mean, I was expecting sort of people to not be...
Did Christos?
Yeah, well, he had an Australian accent for it. It was cool.
I had an American accent.
Just kidding.
Did
just
you?
Kidding.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, not that I needed to, apparently.
Maybe no, I didn't hear an American noticed. Accent, but... No, I was quite impressed with everyone, because I expected a few people to be not timid, but, you know...
Did the Japanese girl put on an accent?
Yeah, she did Japanese.
Well, she actually spoke in another language, English.
Yeah.
So we're going to cut her a break.
One thing I learned from that, seven players, too many.
Really?
Well, kind of like too many for what you wanted to do, but... like
was it?
I
didn't see that. I Wayne would periodically go, there's too many people. But
well, only because I
did an accent too.
Yeah, I always tell him when he gets excited, his voice goes
through
a lot of people.
I realize that.
Are you having fun? So or how about the explaining hands that he gets? Remember when he tried to explain Treehouse to me? Right, he's getting
into the same thing when he talks on top of your explanation to other people as well.
Are we going to talk about like the thing I ran? I'm doing the hands right now. Are we going to talk about the session I ran, or are we going to talk about Wayne Swoible?
I think they're connected.
No, I'm just connected. All right. I thought the number of players really added to it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There was only one time where one player got dropped, and that happened to be me in that one point.
Well, yeah, okay.
Where you forgot that I had a turn.
I'm glad to hear that. From sort of like a storyteller's or a GM's perspective, I was constantly worried that I was ignoring people or not giving people enough time to shine because there were so many.
Well,
or a few times I felt like, okay, like during the little scenarios that I'd set up, I felt like there wasn't enough for people to do. Right, like the one guy, Ted, who was playing the cowboy. Thank God I gave him that lasso at the last minute because he used it. He loved the lasso, and I'm glad he did. But, like, you guys went through that dinosaur real quick to the point where I was like, okay, he didn't get much.
Well, the thing is, it became a running joke that Christos, who was playing the man, the main character, the Indiana Jones guy, didn't get a lot to do because things would be done by the time he got there. So then it became a running joke is that he would take all the credit. And then Christos played that up, saying, yeah, everything's taken care of. Got that guy. I'm going to shoot at the corpse or whatever. Yeah. It got a little disturbing when we had that mountain lion limping away and they're trying to kill it off.
I was surprised by it. Was it Gabby? Like, pretty much 90% of her character was, don't do that, it's bad luck. It's I've had a premonition.
It's cats.
And the other 10% really was, kill the cat, just kill the cat, no matter what. glad for the support there.
Yeah, kudos to everyone who played, because they all played their character well, I thought. You know, there was no one who kind of like sat back and kind of, oh, I don't know what to do. And
it was hard to get through the story because there was so much joking around, but man, everyone was having so much fun. Yeah. It's not like that was a bad thing at all.
Isn't that the main point?
Well, yeah, that was the main point. As Lyle said, my very high voice, are you having fun? Yeah.
And he said that a couple times too. But actually, like Hollowed Earth Expeditions seems to be a really good convention game. Not only is the pulp theme lend itself to just people just having a laugh and still playing that theme, but also the binary dice, which when I was first shown the binary dice, where basically you make these dice and they've got either a success or a failure when you roll a six-sided die or an eight-sided die, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
And I thought, well, that just... we need binary dice. But when Yumiko, who perhaps had never played a role-playing game before, that was quite easy. It's just, instead of saying, it was one less thing to explain to her about a difficulty number. You just say, just roll that. Circles are good. X's are bad. Which is, like, in Japan.
The more circles you get, the better you do. The less circles you get, the worse you do.
Right.
And if you don't get any,
just count the circles. Don't count the X's.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. So I became a little bit of a convert to the binary dice. So definitely people are thinking about running a pulp game or an adventure game at a convention or for a one-shot. I think Hollowed Earth Expedition is pretty good for that.
Yeah.
And if you're... especially if you have new players at the table.
Yeah. I'll say again, I'm a big fan of Hollowed Earth Expedition. It's kind of World of Darkness light. It has a lot of the benefits of that system, but also it's not as heavy. So
I'm
just disappointed we had to finish just when the story was getting interesting.
That was one of those things where, like,
Glint taking down the airplane.
No, my biggest regret is that I spent some of that Sunday actually at the convention planning stuff out when I could have been playing games. Because I was worried that you guys would get farther than you did. Right. Basically, where you guys got in the little story was what I had planned up to on Saturday night.
Mm. Wow.
So I could have spent all of Sunday playing rather than worrying about what's going to happen when they get past that.
But
so,
you didn't miss out on too much gaming, right?
No, you just missed out on playing Space Elite again.
And then you joined in
Then
anyway,
you joined
right?
So you didn't miss out.
I didn't miss out that much, I'm glad people had a good time.
Well, in short, that was an amazing convention. I don't know if it's is it an annual thing
or
semi-annual.
I think so, because I've seen.
But people should definitely mark Golden Week on their calendar, and please check the forums, and Chris will explain why they call it Golden Week. as promised.
Forums at www.idleredhands.com.
And hope to see everybody at the convention next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Bye. We'll
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.